I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has 2 limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code MOM.
Francis, would you like to play a game?
Not particularly, no.
Like, don't be a spoil sport, let's play a game.
What kind of game?
Okay, it's a guessing game, all right? It's not like I Spy and you'll like it. So here we go. I've been watching a lot of Now TV lately and I have a serious man crush on someone.
And?
Can you guess who it is?
Jamie, there are over 300 box sets on Now TV and 1,000 movies. I mean, we could be here all day.
Just give it a go. Go on.
Benedict Cumberbatch from Patrick Melrose.
That is a good show, but no, it's not him.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson from Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle.
No, I can see why you'd guess that. He is the man, but you're wrong again. Try one more time, come on.
Tom Hardy from Dunkirk.
No, unbelievable. Unbelievable. Tom Hardy would 100% be up there, but you're on the right track, but no, it's not him.
I really have no idea, Jamie. I mean,
2 words. Damien Lewis.
From Billions. I love that show.
Yeah, dude, I know, right? And I know I've been binge-watching all 3 series. How good is he in it?
I mean, he's great. I wouldn't say man crush, but he is excellent.
So who's your man crush, then?
I don't have a man crush.
Don't be silly. Everyone has a man crush. Wait, hon. Oh, my God. It's obviously me, isn't it?
What? No, Jamie, I can 100% guarantee you that you are not my man crush.
Francis.
What?
That hurts. Welcome back to our podcast. Frankie, Francis, Francois, Francisco.
Franco
Manco, Francis. Do you know why I'm excited?
Hello, this is Jeremy Vine.
why are you doing that impression?
What?
Oh, you're doing the impression because Luke Kempner's on.
Jeremy Vine here, just...
Yeah, I can hear you're doing it.
In the podcast here. Welcome to Private Parts.
No, that's Francis Ball. It's not Jeremy Vine. I can do an impression as well.
Do an impression.
Yeah, let's go and play football. Yeah. Let's go and score a goal. Hey, let's go and run the time. What's that?
Should we just leave the impressions to Luke Kempner?
No, I'm going to do another one for you. Who's this? Who's this? Can't think of one.
Oh, that's you.
That's not me. I'm always talking.
All right, well, why don't you try and do an impression of me?
Why don't you try and do an impression of me, Francis Ball? No, that is not quite right how you actually do that. This is how you do it. No, me and Katie, we go and play dress up and do weird things with each other.
Exactly, that's uncanny. That's exactly how you sound.
Really?
Yeah, That's exactly how you sound. We should actually just get on with the show because we're just boring all of our listeners.
Well, basically, Luke Kempner is this hilarious guy who's very good at impressions, and we got him to do... we used him, really.
Well, we did. He's great. He was on one of my favourite ever TV shows that I did called Murder and Successful. He's an incredible actor. He went to a drama school in Guildford.
I've got friends at that drama school.
He's a comedian. In so many ways, he's so good. And honestly, his impressions are great. Now, in this episode, we do a prank call where he tries to be Andy Murray. And it is...
Andy Murray. I'm doing it badly and he'll do it well.
Yeah, so let's leave it up to him. We want to say a big shout out to our sponsors as well, Now TV, the Now TV streaming service. You guys freaking rock. But yeah, guys... sorry, I just half burped there. I'm apologising to the microphone.
Do you need a poo or something?
I do actually need a poo, but so we should probably go
in. Let's get on with the podcast then.
Let's get on with
the podcast. Are you sure you can hold it? Because, all right, fine.
No, because we already pre-recorded this, obviously. No,
why do you always say that?
Well, because obviously because I said he did an Andy Murray impression. How would we guess that he was going to do that?
Because we're psychic.
Oh, that's why. Hey, anyway, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, enjoy the podcast with Luke Kempner. Hello everyone, welcome to Private Parts Podcast. This is where we read the most intimate and sordid details of our lives. Joined with us today is Luke Kempner. Luke, my buddy!
Hey, hi guys! Yeah. I'm so excited to be on my favourite podcast.
Well, dude, that means a lot. Is your favourite podcast?
Genuinely.
Really?
It's number one, isn't it?
Wow.
Yeah, certainly is in my library.
Yeah, it certainly is.
I love it. Genuinely, I love it, guys. It's one of those feel-good podcasts that makes you feel really good. I don't want to embarrass you guys, but you know, it's that kind of thing when you're a little bit stressed, pop on the Private Parts Podcast and it makes you feel good again.
That is so nice.
That means a hell of a lot.
No, it genuinely is brilliant. I love it. And all my friends have been on it, so it was about time that I muscled my way in.
You did, but no, listen, you did not, far from muscling away, and we're especially me, I'm a huge fan of yours.
Oh, yeah. Thanks.
Because it's true, man, because I suppose we should start from that we've done, like we've sort of popped around together so many different times, haven't we?
Well, I sort of feel like you've bookmarked a lot of my career, really, because like the first proper telly job I did was Murder and Successful with Your Good Self, where I played Alan Carr with Tom Davis. Mm-hmm. And then I had my own show on ITV2 called Luke Kempner's Impression of 2015, which you came and were a lovely guest on.
Yeah.
And that was an interesting show to make. And you were good fun. And then we did another pilot for Host of the Week, which we got in our swimming trunks together.
Yeah, we did.
And then I've given you some advice on stuff in the past as well, you know?
Dude, and I think,
what kind of advice?
It was like career advice and some personal advice.
Mainly personal advice, but it's true. Like, we did a TV show called Murder and Successful together, which if any of our listeners have never watched it, it's a BBC Three programme. It's basically, in a sense, immersive theatre. They get a certain actor on, like normally a celebrity. They get on. What is this?
What were you?
Well, I didn't want to say I was a celebrity.
But you say that every day. You tell that to anyone who'll listen.
Do you introduce yourself as the celebrity Jamie Lang?
Yeah, no. When he calls his bank, he says, "Hi, it's just celebrity Jamie Lang calling."
Do you know what Francis does? Francis will say he's booking a restaurant.
Yeah,
he'll phone them up and say, "Hi, I'd like to book a table for Francis Bull," and then he'll pause and see their response. That's what you do every single time.
What are you talking about?
That's what you do every time.
I'd say Bull, Boulle, and I pronounced it Bull, and then they'll go, "Oh, Boulle," and I'll be like, "No,
Boulle, Bull." But are there restaurants in sort of where you're from where they would know you?
What, from London?
Yeah.
Yeah, would they know you?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah.
Well, like Pizza Express and things like that.
Pizza Express, yeah. Every Pizza Express. Would you like the regular?
But we did. So Luke and I did Murder and Successful together. And in a sense, so they get us, a celebrity comes
out.
Yeah,
it's a celeb.
It's a celebrity comes on and the celebrity has to be a detective for the whole episode.
Yeah,
and
the rookie detective.
They have to solve a crime, and the celebrity, whoever it is, has no idea what is going to happen within the show. Like, nothing at all. So they come on with nothing at all, not knowing, no script, anything at all. But the actors, you guys are given a script.
So Tom Davis, who is an absolute legend, he plays D.I. Sleet, who's a sort of useless cop. But he always gets given a new rookie and they've got to solve a different crime. And it's always in Successville, which is populated by celebrities, but all played by impressionists and character actors. And we're given a script as far as sort of like, we know where we're trying to get to. And we know, so like, when I was Alan Carr in the episode with you. I was with my brother Jimmy Carr, and we owned a car, you know, a car mechanic place, and we were sort of like the Cray brothers, was the kind of the Carr brothers, and so we knew kind of where we had to get to with you, but we had no idea what you were going to do.
Just before we jump in there. Luke is one of the best impressionists I know. You are simply incredible.
I can tell.
Thank you.
He's incredible. Thanks, but no, but we'll get into that. But continue.
Okay. So basically, and then we have a different celebrity, and they've got no idea what's going to happen. But Tom, as D. Isley, will guide the celebrity through, and then you have to work it. The celebrity has to work it out, and if they get it wrong, then poor you. Did you get it right?
No, I got it wrong. But do you know what happened?
You get everything wrong.
No, I didn't get everything wrong. But also, because I forgot, you know, I was so excited to kind of please everyone the whole time that I forgot that I was actually trying to figure out a murder and trying to figure out. So at the end, Tom Davis was literally like, hey, he's like, Lang, who do you think it is? And I went, oh, shit. I have no idea. So
you're just having a lovely time.
Yeah. I was like, I'm on TV. So we got to the end of the episode and you have to kill this thing. And I was just having a lovely time. So I had no idea. So Tom Davis said to me, Lang, which one is it? And I was like, shit. I'm just so happy to be on TV. I have no idea. And he went, when you kill them, say something cool. Yeah. So all I went, oh, God, I went, yippee-ki-yay. And shot Darcy Bustle, who was the girl. And I shot her. And obviously it turns out that she wasn't the right one to
kill. Wasn't it me that had done it?
Yeah, you had done it.
Oh, see, look, that's how much I remember from it.
You had done it.
Yeah, but I got to do... I was so excited because we had, like, guns. Not real guns, but guns that, like, that they spent 2 hours showing us how to use. And because they all immediately worried we were going to kill ourselves. But they all shoot blanks, but they are, like, powerful things.
Yeah, they were proper...
You had a gun, didn't you?
Yeah, I had a gun. They were, like, proper guns that you, like...
Your hand was proper, like... and they're heavy.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a weakling, but they were heavy. But it was amazing.
But, was that like? Would you say that was one of your? That can't be one of your first biggest jobs.
It was the first telly thing I really did. Like, and also I was going to say that your episode is still considered amongst the fans and even amongst the production team as the best one we ever did. Genuinely,
it was really, really
because fun. You were so fun and so eager, like you say.
So wait, so was that your first ever like proper TV job?
Yeah, completely. Like apart from when I sang "O Come Are You Faithful" when I was 8 on Blue Peter.
Oh, but do you have a badge?
Yeah, I do.
Really? Wow.
I don't know where it is actually.
It's quite impressive.
Because I think it could still get you into museums and stuff, couldn't it? I think that's what you could do. Could you make it into London landmarks?
No, you couldn't.
With a Blue Peter badge. Yeah, you got it for free. That was the perk of it.
What?
Yeah.
There was no way. Oh, sorry, we're now turning things down.
I'm so sorry. Quite loud in my ears.
Yeah, well, you might need to turn mine down. I'm so sorry. There we go. Is that better?
Yeah, better.
I thought you guys run a tight ship. What the hell is this?
It's because you come in here and
it's an absolute joke.
You've screwed us around.
This is a great podcast. It's number one in the charts. It's useless.
I don't know what's going on.
Here we go. We're good.
Okay, so when you had your Blue Beater badge, that means you could go into London landmarks.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, you could go into the Tate. You could go into the Natural History Museum. I don't know how many times I used it. I was quite young at the time.
But I feel like the Natural History Museum, you can always go in for free. I don't feel like...
No, there are some parts.
Do you go in for free because you're a celebrity?
No, but Francis once again walks in and goes, what, you're going to charge me?
No, I don't. I'll make a donation to the...
Yeah. Yeah. The honesty box. I went to it was my wife and I's anniversary this weekend, and we were at a wedding in Scotland, so we went to Glasgow. It's a really nice hotel we wanted to stay in, and we went to.
Wait, hang on, so it was your anniversary, so we went. You know where? Hey, honey. Hey, honey, you know where I'm going to take you?
Push the boat out. Take you to Glasgow.
I take you to Glasgow.
That's so hard.
You can see why we've last so long.
Glasgow's lovely, Jamie.
Yes.
What are you like? You're offending all of the people.
It's a great city.
We got listeners in Glasgow. You know that.
I did a personal appearance in Scotland ages ago. A PA, one of those things where you turn up to clubs and wave. And I got back from the PA. Should I be saying this? I'm going to say it, aren't I? And I went back to the hotel. And I slept with the receptionist. she took me up to. I went into the reception and said, "Oh, hi, I've lost my room card," which is true. I wasn't sort of trying to flirt with her. And we went up to the room and.
We opened the door. This is ages ago. She was a young girl, obviously.
I know the receptionist. She's like 60.
No. She was a young girl.
Nothing wrong with sleeping with a 60-year-old.
There is nothing at all wrong.
No, there is nothing. I was just saying. I was just clarifying.
Okay, yeah.
Fact check.
She was not 60 years old. No.
What's wrong with 60-year-old?
Nothing. But she wasn't 60. She was like a
fact.
What am I about to say? She was a young lass. That's what she was.
And 16.
Lass, because she's in Scotland. Yeah.
Alas,
oh, Jimmy, no. I love you, mate, in Chelsea. Yeah. Can I stay in your room?
Is that how it went down?
No. No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. So we could play it out together. So
okay.
Let's try and play it out together. Okay.
Right,
so I come to it. So
hello, can I help you?
Hi. Oh, God. Sorry, I've just come from the nightclub and I've lost my room card. Can I get a new one, please?
Can I just quickly ask you?
Sure.
Are you a celebrity?
I'm on TV.
I found your room card. There it is.
Oh, thank you so much.
Do you want me to take you up to?
Yeah, please.
I'm worried you might get lost. And then there'll be a lift.
Then there's a lift. We get into the lift.
Boom.
Mm-hmm. Oh, level 4.
Is there any awkward chat in the lift?
No, there's a little bit of music playing.
Oh. Dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun, dun. Boom. Okay, this is your room here. It's our best room on this floor.
Thank you. So, and also, what time is breakfast in the morning?
It's until 10:30.
Okay, and also, just quick, could you show me where the minibar is?
Yeah, it's just here, there's everything you could possibly want in there, including a tea cake.
Oh, lovely. Oh God, there's
you okay.
What are there's just, you know, there's two glasses here, you know, and
yeah, that's if you had a guest, which you don't.
Oh, that's true. That's true. And
okay,
you and
I'm gonna go now.
Okay. And then I locked the door.
Okay. I thought you were gonna be a bit more persuasive. Yeah. You know, you just locked her in. Yeah. Oh God. Am I like in here
Dominic,
for the night then?
Dominic Strauss Kahn.
No, yeah. But what happened was that she did actually show me.
I'm really sweating.
Yeah, I was
yeah, you guys are getting into that.
Hell. I got sweaty
that's
as well.
Really like,
I got sweaty as well. But it's true, she got taken to the room. She took me to the room and we started chatting and I literally said, I said, where is the minibar? And she said, over here. And I said, oh, that's quite nice. And she said, oh, but you don't have a guest. And I went, well, listen, if you would like to join me for a drink.
Saucy little lass.
Yeah, so who was manning the reception?
Or womaning the reception.
Oh, yeah,
that's true.
But yeah. Hey, by that point...
It was a 60-year-old. Oh, that young lass is off again.
Oh, yeah, I slept with a 6-year-old male.
It's down to me.
Yeah, you should lower the octave in your voice.
Okay. Oh, she's off again. She's off at that celebrity Jamie Lang. So, but hang on. So she said, but you haven't got a guest.
Yeah, and then I said,
shag you?
No, and I said to her, I went, oh, well, listen, do you want to have a drink with me?
Oh, sorry. I didn't think you'd ask, but yes.
And then we had a drink together and one thing led to another and we started kissing.
You must have known it was on the cards as soon as the receptionist is saying, I will stay for a drink with you.
But I don't, it depends what are you like? So you're obviously, when did you get married?
2 years ago.
So you got 2 years, and how long were you dating before that?
About 4 years.
So it's four,
young,
so it's,
like a young, you know, we met when I was like 24.
So you met when you were 24, but you're probably like me, and I think France is the same. I've always been slightly, people think that I have this, I've always been slightly nervous around girls. I've never been that confident.
I know what you mean, but I don't think I've ever been in a situation where a girl, like in a hotel situation like that.
Do they not be like, I saw you as Alan Carr on Murder and Successful.
The trouble is with being an impressionist, when you're doing an impression of Jeremy Carr, it doesn't turn the ladies on. It probably does. There's probably Jeremy Carr fan fiction, which I would love to read.
But if you were going to be flirty and sexy with a girl, but being Jeremy Kyle, how would you be flirty and sexy with him?
I would say, I've lost my room key. Have you got it? I know, we've done a lie detector test. It says you did. Now take me to my room and get out. Oh no, I've locked the door. It's like my friend Jamie Lang. Well, the thing is that really, I wasn't
a TV impressionist.
Yeah.
When I was before my current wife, my only wife. I'm not planning on getting another one in the future.
Your first wife. Yes, yeah.
Of my current wife. So, you've had the whole celebrity thing to abuse, which is what you did.
Yeah, do you know what it was? Is that I think it's such a weird. Okay, I think I've said this before. When I was at university, I was never. I was kind of like the fun, silly one.
Right,
and so I had a girlfriend in my first year who was great, but then we broke up and then I was like the fun, silly one. And so I wasn't like, I wasn't like a DJ. I didn't smoke that much weed. So I was cool, but I was not one of the real like...
I love smoking weed. It's like, maybe you're cool or not.
Isn't that really...
One was one of the cool weed smoking guys.
But you know what I mean. So
Is this true? Was
he ever cool? No.
Okay, fine.
No, but
that is true.
But I think
did you get lots of girls?
I always
went for 60-year-old women.
No.
I tell you what it was, I could never close the deal.
Okay.
I could never close. That was my problem.
So you were a opener, but you never closed.
I could open up and then I could chat. But then when it came to that point of sort of...
You never land the fish.
I would never land the plane. I would never do it. I'd sort of
Also, I was really short at school. And I sort of had my growth spurt a lot later than other people. So I was just shorter than all the girls. And I remember we had this one time where everyone was giving all the girls piggybacks. And all the guys...
And
really,
a girl gave you a piggyback.
Yeah. Well, basically, like, I gave this girl who I was absolutely in love with, Jamie Brown, if you're listening, and I gave her this piggyback and I dropped her because she was so much bigger than me. And I don't think a girl ever went near me after that again.
There is a period when you're at school where suddenly all the girls just go so much taller than all the boys. I don't know when it's like 11 or...
But I think it just lasted for longer than it did for other boys. And yes, I wasn't great with the girls at school.
I was weird. When I was at school... I was always quite small, but I went through quite like an ugly duckling stage.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I went through...
Just a stage, yeah.
And then I blossomed. Yeah, I went through this sort of an ugly duckling stage from about 14 to 16, but I was still quite popular with the girls.
Mm.
And I would get girls, and then universities, when it changed, at university I just didn't really get with girls. I remember...
Oh, really?
Because they were a bit more...
What, cunning? What,
considered. Or cunning?
I don't know what that even...
What was different? Why were you more of a hit with schoolgirls than university girls?
Because
is this still the case?
I was more of a hit when I was at school because I played a lot of sport. I was the rugby star. I was just a really...
But at university, you didn't have a...
Well, at university, I think... Luke, you can explain. Did you go to university?
Yes, I went to drama school.
Oh, you went to drama school. So what drama school were you at?
I was at the Guildford School of Acting Conservatory.
That's where my...
Oh, I know some people were.
It's a good school.
It's a really good school.
Yeah.
And so...
The best.
What was it like there? Was it very much about... Because my university days... This is interesting. My university days wasn't really about work. That was sort of second on our list.
Yeah.
Drugs.
He wasn't one of the cool guys smoking weed.
What is this? Mine was sort of second on the list where it's so girls and things.
Studying.
Hooking were first. But at drama school, I assume that being an actor and being drama was top of your list.
But what's really interesting is that in the same way that sort of celebrityism is a thing that attracts people because it's sort of, you know, they're the powerful people, so they're attractive. In the same way that at drama school, that when I was in my third year, the first yearers were really interested, where when I was in my first year, it wasn't sort of, I didn't have loads of girls. But then once you were sort of the person that was going to be in all the shows, then the girls were way more interested.
So you had a bit of celebrity status.
Kind of, but within drama school, yeah.
Mm. And was there at drama school...
Did you abuse it, like Jamie?
Yes. to a certain degree,
oh,
yes.
So you were quite...
I didn't lock anyone in a hotel room, but...
Quite Kevin Spacey. I'll give you a role.
Yeah,
just to let everyone know, Luke Kempner. If he's,
you mean Harvey Weinstein?
Yeah.
Well,
I'll give you a role in my next student play.
Yeah, exactly. In my next profit share, if you sleep with me. I just think you were just the one that was on stage playing the lead roles, and you became more attractive.
Mm.
And maybe I blossomed as well. But I could grow a beard when
I was 21. Okay, but let's dissect this kind of situation. Why, we can get into sort of the celebrity world, why girls or guys, you know, both combined, you for some reason we find it very attractive that someone has that status, yes, in a sense, for no apparent reason. But why does it, and it even happens at your school, right? Mm. But why is that happening?
Yeah, because like you're saying, being the football team, again, that makes you the more attractive.
But I think it goes back to your sort of evolutionary view and a mindset. You know, we traditionally have been in small tribes, in, yes, in local communities, where you were admired for your yes, ability and your capability on a local level. But to be known to so many people is an unnatural thing. It's like not rooted in any kind of evolutionary development, right? It's something that's an anomaly because of the way that we can promote people to the masses these days, which is not like that wouldn't have been like you might have had mythology and stories going around about people, but you haven't.
Yeah,
been,
when,
you
Thor, haven't when Thor came in,
you haven't. Yes,
you haven't, when Thor came in, yeah, like, I'm going to fuck that.
He wanted a lot of selfies,
but you haven't been able to show a picture or an image of someone to like millions of people in throughout history until like TV and print
media.
But
it would have been the person who shot the most deer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But
who would have been the celebrity in a sort of
the tribe,
yeah, the chief, or I guess in sort of Aztec time, the emperor.
I think we're missing my point is that I get it that but
they were worshipped, right?
But why, you know, even as small as a drama school, the fact that you are the lead role, why does that give you that status? Why are people? Why do you become more attractive?
Small pond, big fish in a small pond. Mm.
I think it's innate within you, isn't it? Because it goes all the way back, like you're saying, to that they're the most important people. It probably goes back to who's going to give me the best baby.
I think it is, and also who is going to, I guess, you know, people feel like they're almost living by, well, they're absorbing some of that kind of thing from the people that they're that association with them.
But I don't think it's always a sexual thing, because like, I know that when I meet people who I admire, or especially with like football players, I'm fine with most celebrities. Meeting you, I'm fine with most celebrities. But then it's that if I meet like a football, an Arsenal player, I would go to pieces.
But why? Why?
Because
then?
I don't know. I'm also. It's funny because like.
Do you support Arsenal?
I do. Yeah.
No, I don't.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
It's like even with like Joel Dommett's a mate of mine. I know he's done the podcast, mm-hmm, and even when every time I see Joel, it because he's a mate of mine, but he's sort of like I still sort of see him as this kind of like big celebrity, and I sort of get a little. I find it hard to just relaxed.
Really?
I've never told him this. So, but, by the way, Joel, you know I'm really cool, but actually, I think I'm fancy Joel Dommett. And who wouldn't?
Okay. Who wouldn't? It's so but yeah. I'm so with you. I remember I interviewed, or I was with someone the other day where I think it was like Gerard Butler. Mm. I had to go and interview Gerard Butler for like a junket thing, whatever it was. And in the room, I felt like my leg, like, why is my leg shaking? Like, and I'm sort of acting weird. And he'll say something that's not funny, and I go, ha, 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 and you'll laugh for some weird reason, you know what I mean?
How do people, look, because I'm lots of name dropping here, but I went to see Kevin Bridges the other night, and love Kevin Bridges, and myself and Ian, Sterling, who I went with, we ended up all going for drinks afterwards. And Kevin's so down to earth that you never feel like that kind of, I need to do something to impress him, or he just makes you feel at ease. And I don't know how you can possibly.
That's because he's from Glasgow, though. So you see him as
it's
below
he
you.
Works in the vibes hotel.
But Lou, did you always want to act? Was it always about that?
Yeah. It was never ever a decision of what I'm going to do. You know, it was, I'll go to drama school.
Had you been performing since you were?
Like my dad's an actor, so I would just. I was sort of brought up around it. Mm. And then when I was at school, it was always wanted. Anything that was important was about the performing side of things.
But did you have an idea of what kind of acting you wanted to do? Or was it?
It was always musical theatre that I wanted to do because I did amateur dramatics and stuff. So I always wanted to do musical theatre. I always wanted to be in Les Mis and I always wanted to be in Avenue Q. And they were the first two
shows. I love
shows
Avenue Q.
Yeah. I did.
Yeah. Yeah, so do I.
Oh, it's great.
Oh, you were in?
I love that one.
So you were in both of them?
Yeah. Were the first two jobs I did. And it sort of got to that point where I'd done that and then I'd always really enjoyed doing comedy and impressions and I'd always done impressions as a teacher at school or drama school and then in Les Mis of like cast members and stuff and then I just started putting the stuff on YouTube is how I kind of started really and I made the decision of I was doing 8 shows a week of Les Mis which is like 3.5 hours long got to a point where I just wasn't enjoying it.
I just don't try to cut you off that I think that is just acting the same thing every single night for that long. I just can applaud people and or also at the same time sort of feel sorry for them. I think it's just it's an unbelievable
but sort for of them this. They're living the dream, a lot of them. Yeah.
Well, I
but
think
you, I did for a while and it's this is of no judgment of people who love doing it because it is brilliant and there's so much of it that's amazing, but it's the length of time you do it and we're talking about, you know, like being within a school or being within a tribe like Les Mis or in being in a West End show is like a
insular
bubble. It's a complete bubble and you it's an office and you sort of you go on stage and you see the same people at the same time every night they're your friends that's great and
it literally is you're literally like well here comes Pete and then he comes in singing oh here comes Jan
like, it's like I had an awkward like sort of breakup with a girl like during a run of a show
what, in the middle of it you went past and went I dumped you
it's over
yeah exactly oh my mic's on but outside of the show but then on the show you've still got to see them and like sort of act with them even though you've broken up like oh so it's like it's a
suppose that's office
world.
Romance.
Yeah, but that's it. It is an office. It's a workplace like anyone else's. It's just it's on the stage in front of 2,000 people.
But what is the because you
so what part were you in Les Mis?
I was I understudied Gareth Gates.
Oh, really?
And as Marius, and then I played the part for a little while. But my main part was Montparnasse, which was one of Thénardier's gang.
Ah,
yeah.
But is I suppose
and a place in Paris.
Exactly, yeah. Which I've been to.
But I suppose those kind of moments, right? So you came out of drama school,
yes.
And this is your lifelong dream. So you've done it since school. Your dad's an actor. You've grown up this entire time, and you finally get. You know, I think as a kid, you know, you go and watch the West End, you go, God, if I got this one, it's the same. But I suppose what you're then saying is that you get that role, but then after having done it for long, you're like, well, now I'm over this.
Yeah, well,
so it's weird how your kind of dreams and aspirations suddenly
completely.
Change, right?
My ambition, it's weird, right? Because my ambition was always, you know, when I sort of met with agents and stuff just as I was leaving school, they were like, what's your dream? And I was like, my dream is to have my own show at the O2. That was always what I wanted to do. But I also really wanted to be in musical theatre, and I knew that that was something that I would have to work towards, and I'm still working towards it now. But like when Les Mis was a show that I'd always wanted to do, and when I got it, and when you go into rehearsals and you suddenly see these people that you've watched on stage previously, like all of that is amazing, and that buzz, and like my mum cried when I told her I got the show, and all of that was great.
What? Because she was so disappointed. What? You're going on stage?
You're on stage? Oh no!
But it was just, and all of that was just the dream come true. But then after 3 months, you're sitting there going, "Well, I'm now. I needed more than that, and not everyone needs more than that.
Yeah, what next?
Some people can find it, but for me as well, like what I do now, which is writing my own material, going out on stage, trying it out, getting that reaction. Sometimes it not going well. Like all of that is so addictive.
Yeah,
I think doing the same thing every night for me wasn't as addictive.
But it's I just find it's so fascinating how like you're so if you could okay fine if I suppose this one my question is if you could put yourself if you could swap shoes with someone today if you could put your shoes like yourself in those shoes now who would you pick
That's a really good question.
Yeah, who would you... What career-wise, what they've done...
Jamie's really hoping you can say
yeah. And not to see anyone. Yeah, exactly,
yeah. You can say anyone in the room if you need...
Francis.
Thank you.
No, you wouldn't. Trust me. Trust me. You would not. You'd be looking over your shoulder every single day. You're literally, oh, God, what? I don't know where I was
What's
going with that.
Yeah. Shoulder for?
I don't know. He's worried about all things he's done.
Yeah, there are people who want me dead.
He's the most wanted man.
He's the most wanted man. So who would you swap shoes with today?
Okay, I think I'll give you three.
I love
so
this.
So I think it would be James Corden.
Really?
Really?
Because what James Corden
does... You
like
his physique.
I think what I love about James Corden is that he gets to do all the different things that he does. He can sing, he can act, he can do characters, he can interview people, he can be funny, and he does all of those things. And
he has a creative control.
And he's himself, and that's what I would like to do. I never want to be just Alan Carr or just being Jeremy Kyle. I want to be able to be Luke Kempner, but be able to sort of do all those different things. So then people like Jimmy Fallon as well in America, I think he's amazing. Yeah. But then also look at someone like Jack Whitehall, who is sort of, achieving all of that O2 dream that's always been in my head of like one day to sell an arena. And that might never happen, but that's my aspiration, is to get there doing what you do best and having that control over it.
Because I think that's so right. I think I completely agree with you with the James Corden stuff. I think he gets to have creative control, he gets to do what he wants to do. But I suppose for you, because you're an impressionist and because you are an actor, you know, people, it's hard because people aren't loving you for you. Mm. Do you know what I mean? And that is that
a bit mean.
No, but I think they are. But do you know what I mean?
No, completely. But I think, you know, like my first shows that I wrote for stage was a show called The Only Way Is Downton, which was a whole show about Downton Abbey, where Downton was in financial ruin and the Dowager was getting married to Tom Daly and wanted the most expensive wedding imaginable. And those two stories ended up being solved by them turning it into TOWIE. But I wasn't in it. I was in it. I played all the characters, but I wasn't in it as myself. And I sort of had to make a decision of like, okay, well, do I write The Only Way Is Game of Thrones or The Only Way Is Breaking Bad, or do I try and become Luke Kempner, but then use my own sort of stories about what it's like watching Love Island with my wife and what it's like when I'm like, you don't fancy blokes with all those muscles, do you? And she's going, no, I don't. Yeah, that's not for me, really. It's about who's inside. And I'm like, no, it's not. It's not.
Yeah, it's definitely
but
not.
But I can put that through like a Gogglebox sketch and have Andy Murray watching it and going, oh, you know, I really, I'd love to have this physique and his mum's saying, you don't need that, Andy. And then Jamie going, oh, can I go on Love Island, Mum? No, Jamie, no one would step forward for you. But like, so it's like, it's kind of stuff from my life that I can put through a sketch. Yeah. Where what I don't do is go, oh, have you ever realised that when Gary Lineker talks, it always sounds like he's telling you a secret. You know, like I don't do that style of it. I like to put it through sort of stories and observations about my own life. So I get to be myself. And with the Imitation Game show that's on at the moment on ITV, I feel like I get a chance to show myself as well as just doing and not just being an impression.
But also with you, Luke, is that you know, you're hugely talented in so many ways and you're a great actor. Do you ever get frustrated, as all actors do, where the fact that you're like, I could play that, I could do that. And it's like almost like how, you know, where some people get roles where they... And I definitely think this, where some people get roles where you don't think they possibly deserve to have that role. Does it become frustrating as an actor, or is that the way of the acting world?
I tell you, it changed for me when I decided to go and do comedy, because for me, it's all about having that control over your career, where when I was in musical theatre, you're waiting for your agent to call you and say, oh, Mamma Mia is recasting. Would you like to audition for the part of Sky? And you go, oh, okay. And then you go in and there's 30 people that are auditioning for the part of Sky. Yeah. And it's kind of, you know, not necessarily about what you can do. It's about whether you fit for the role. And like you say, sometimes you might see someone get a part and you go, really?
Yeah.
Like, how do they get that? Is it because they know the casting director? Where, like, when you're doing comedy...
Weinstein, maybe. Yeah.
if only I'd let him. But, like, when...
I say this every single time, and I do. If I could sleep my world to the top, I would do it.
Mate,
I would
love... Today's the day. Yeah. I can help you. Yeah, where do you want to go, baby?
Yeah. I'm going to give Luke Kempner a blowjob in the bathroom.
James has been doing it every time I'm talking. That's what's happening under the table. And you will be in that profit share that I put on. But I think that changed when I decided to do my own thing, because then it was, you were never going, when's my agent going to call? When's the next thing coming up? Because you're going, well, if that doesn't happen, then I can create my own show.
Because also, if you're not, if you are constantly waiting, my girlfriend's an actress, and you know, obviously, if you don't have something else to like distract you from the wait of, you know, when is your agent going to call? What auditions are coming up?
Yeah.
You know, it can drive you mad, and it's a very manic, depressive, way of living, right? If you're not, Katie has other things to keep her occupied.
But. Yeah, but and I think you need that. Like, and I've done some talks in drama schools where I've sort of gone back and talked about my career. But my advice to them all is get to make something yourself. Like, we're in a way now where we can put stuff online, we can do a podcast or whatever. Don't rely on if I don't get Les Mis straight out of drama school, then I fail.
Because the reality is, even actors who are successful, still some of them don't even get they'll get one show a year, and they're like seen as, you know, successful actors.
Completely.
But then the rest of the year, what are they doing?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
People think that like a successful actor is working all the time.
But it's just
not like that.
No, completely.
But Luke, have you ever had? Because all the auditions you've done, you must have done literally thousands, right? Have you ever had an audition where you're like, something's happened where you go like, this is just the worst thing that's ever happened to me? Have you ever had a moment in an audition where you're like, shit?
I mean, I've had like, you know, just like forgetting words and stuff like that. But like, I'll tell you, I did have a really bad one. Okay, I was auditioning for Panto, and I went in, and I just thought the guy took an immediate dislike to me. And he said to me, he goes, what song have you got? And I said, Are You Ready for Love by Elton John? And he went, okay. And then the bloke goes, dun, 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 and he stopped it, and he goes, this always makes it sound like he's about to rape somebody. And I went, what? And he goes, yeah, I just always think this song sounds like that. I was like, okay. And then I'm like, are you ready? Are you ready for love? Yes, I am. Oh, yeah. And I'm like, and then my brain's going, oh, I think he's right. And I just couldn't commit to it while I was trying to be Prince Charming.
What was this? What was this for?
For a panto.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah. God.
I love the fact.
Cheery.
That, I love the fact that the director. I went, dude. And wait, hold on a second. Yeah. He stopped it just before you were going to sing.
I mean, yeah. So,
would you ever do a panto, Jamie?
Oh, I'd love to see you in a panto.
I just
buttons.
Do you think you're above that or something?
No, I
don't. Because you're not.
Mate, you want to do it? I could probably hook you up. If you slap me off, I'll get you buttons. Would you be buttons or Prince Charming or a baddie?
I don't know. I think
they're quite well paid, those things. They make a fortune.
Yeah, lots of money.
I don't know what I would play. I don't know what I would do.
Buttons.
Who is Buttons? I don't
Buttons
know.
Buttons is the, hiya, kids!
Oh, God, the one who's just like...
on all the time.
Internally just
you're
upset.
The most annoying one.
You'd be Buttons, I think.
Right, on that note, ladies and gentlemen, I am going to read my diary. Now, Luke, what we do in the episode is out my diary. Okay. As you know, you're a big fan, so here we go. Monday. Now, I don't know if it's anyone else has this, but I sent a message to the wrong person. Normally, it is a text that you press that send button and immediately regret it, but can't do anything about it. Mine was a WhatsApp message, and instead of one message, I was writing a whole conclusion to why I disagreed with the person in question, and without realising it, was sending it to the person I was talking about. Have you ever done this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you done that?
Yeah, it's really awkward.
What happened with your one?
So there was once where I was like, I was writing. You know how sometimes you're writing an angry email to someone, not planning on sending it, but just like, okay, this is the first draft, right?
This is the first draft of your anger.
This is the first draft, and I'm going to tone it down a bit. And you know, you just want to vent, right? So you're like,
feels good.
Yeah, feels good to get it all out. Like, and you're like,
even writing. Oh, this feels great.
Yeah, and then you finish it, and you're like, you know, you sit back, and you're like, yeah, that is how I feel. And then you never send it, obviously. Right. And sometimes you don't even send, you know, anything other than, you know, you call them or whatever. Well, anyway, once it was in the middle of this this mining deal, which was kind of going south, and I was just like trying to, this was a long time ago, and I was trying to sort of, you know, get it all back together. And and I wrote this a really angry email to one of my lawyers, and accidentally pressed send. And it was, I can't really, you'd have to see the email, but it was not an email that I should have sent. It was.
And how did you style it out? Because that's always the thing. It's what do you do afterwards?
I was just like, oh my God, he's going to think I'm a deranged, totally deranged.
Psychopath. Signing it.
And I was like, I just had to say, look, mate, I'm really sorry. I didn't mean to send that.
Joking.
Yeah. Oh, my friend sent that.
Oh, my friend's at my phone.
But I had this even worse again. And I'm going to tell the story. So we had, when I first started my business, we had a person who was working for us, and we had to sort of fire them. We had to get rid of that. You know, we had to let them go. And we were dealing with lawyers the best way to do this. And we were going through all the law, the things, and we were writing emails back and forth. And the problem was that this guy was a friend of ours, and one of my business partners, one of his greatest friends. And we sort of said, look, we want to stay out of this. We don't want to be a part of this. So we'll get someone, one of our board members, to do the whole thing. Email chain going back and forth for like 30, 40 emails of how we're going to do this. And then somehow we went, right, we came to a conclusion of what we're going to do. And the lawyers CC'd in the person we had to fire and sent it to everyone on the whole thing. So he was able to reread everything had been said. Yeah. I mean, we were literally like, what? And also, still then, we brushed over it.
Really?
It was so British. You're literally like, oh, well, it doesn't matter, does it?
My friend on my phone?
So did you say, I take it if you've read the emails?
Don't read back the thread. I did it the other day. It was quite. This is quite a sweet one, though. I literally did it last week because I've been supporting Ian Sterling on tour, and he'd said some really
just sitting in the crowd going, "Go on, Ian,
you're doing great, man,
you're doing great."
Doing a sort of 20 minutes bit of comedy before Ian does his long bit of comedy, and he'd said some really nice things about how it had gone, and so I was messaging my wife what he'd said. But send it to him. So I was just like, Ian said that I was great, and he said that he really wished I was doing some more support dates too.
Embarrassing.
But the good thing about WhatsApp is that you can delete it. But it looks even worse.
Yeah,
then it says, why this message has been deleted.
Yeah,
and it's what did you say?
Yeah, exactly. No, but actually, now ever since that happened with sending that email to my lawyer. He's not my lawyer anymore now, but not because of that. But I've got this thing. So now, if I press send, it doesn't actually send it for like 5 minutes.
Oh, really?
So then, I've set it up so that it doesn't actually send the email. So I can go back and go, oh no, I don't want to send that. Or if I think of something else I can add, I can unsend it and add something else.
Well, do you want to hear something so interesting? Because
you guys, it's really good. Actually,
this continues on. The saving grace was the fact that WhatsApp now has a delete button, which means the message can disappear and instead leave a message from WhatsApp saying message deleted, which then sparks conversation to why I deleted the messages. My obvious response couldn't have been more two-faced. Nothing, man. I was just trying to organise something with you and realised that I can't make the dates work, so it doesn't matter. Thank God
what
for
a terrible lie.
I honestly panicked. That was literally it. Oh, man, just trying to organise something with you.
Did he read it?
Well, yeah, because I deleted all them. There was like five deleted messages.
The worst is when you delete it after they've read it. And they're like, oh, sorry, I got that. Yeah.
I tell you another a sort of version of this is when you like something on Instagram by accident.
Oh, yeah.
How quickly it comes up on the person's phone.
Yeah.
Because I thought sometimes you're trying to zoom in and but you double click like you would a normal photo.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah. Jamie, for some reason, you always do that to like naked male torsos.
But then it likes it, and then you go, oh shit, I don't mean to like that. I don't want them to know that I'm liking that or even looking at that picture. So you unlike it. So this happened, and I told my mate, I can't even tell the full story on air, but I told my mate about this, and I was like, but if you unlike it, it comes off straight away, and they won't even see it unless they've looked at their phone. And my mate was like, no, it comes up as a notification if they've got the notifications
immediately, and then you can't. Yes. Oh, God.
So and we tested it out. I was like, not immediately. And he goes, mate, like a picture on my phone, and on my Instagram. So he showed me his phone. I liked it. It came up immediately.
And also
liked a picture.
Exactly. And then when you go through to look at what they've liked, it's gone. The like's gone. That's how you know.
But if you swipe across on that notification, everyone's looking at me like, okay, so they need to know this information. When you swipe along on that notification, it takes you to the photo that person liked, even if you've unliked it.
Really?
Be careful out there, kids.
Wait, which way?
God, this is a warning.
Yeah, it's a war zone out there. Yeah. I had it with my wonderful, and I have to say, beautiful girlfriend. Just got to say that, because I do. I love her very much.
And what you were liking other girls.
No, this is your current girlfriend.
This is my current girlfriend, yeah. And she said to me last night, she went, the other day, she was like, why do you follow that like new person? I was like, huh? She was like, why do you follow that new person? I was like, what do you mean? And she was like, you know, there's like this other bit where you can go on followers and you see what everyone's up to. And I went, I know that page.
Yes.
And it is, I discovered that everything, not that I was following people randomly and stuff.
But you were following random girls.
No, well, I think that I definitely have
followed. Otherwise, why would she be bothered about
it? She's not bothered, she just saw it. But I think that I have followed, when I was single, I would follow random girls.
And then why did she say you followed?
Oh, well, this was basically a long story.
When you weren't single.
No, this was a long story where my friend, a girl was messaging him. He wanted to see what she looked like. She was a private account, so I requested it. That's the old loophole.
That's a good friend.
We never used to lie. Wednesday.
That's God.
I keep having dreams at the moment that I'm being chased. Chased by a gang of people that for some reason I don't know why they want to capture me.
That means, you know what that means? That means you've done something wrong and you're worried that people are going to find out about it.
Oh.
Liking pictures on Instagram. Yeah.
But that's what it means.
Is it? Yeah. I don't think I've done anything wrong.
Well, clearly there's something in your subconscious that you're...
Well, then you're going to love this bit. The worst thing about these dreams is that they make perfect sense in your head, but when you try and explain them, they seem bonkers. It seems so straightforward in your brain, but when it's narrated out of your mouth, you suddenly realise that there is no sense to it. The strange thing is that I have a juxtaposition. Not only am I having dreams of being chased, I'm also had a dream coupled amongst the chasing dreams of sex. I don't know what my fancy is. Is Elle chasing me and sexually attacking me? Or is I just simply confused, ATM? If you know what this means, please let me know. It's true. I'm getting chased and then suddenly I'm having sex and then I'm being chased again.
Mm.
Is that weird?
What does that one mean?
Well, that's obviously because you've done something wrong that involves sex. That you're worried is going to catch up with you.
On that note, Francis, let's have question of the week.
Oh, the question of the week. I've got it right here in my notes.
I've slowly gone through all of these minstrels and chocolates in front of me.
Well, and just touched them.
So, yeah, I've just gone through
fingered.
I just touched every single one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I won't have one then. I'm going
to
have one.
I used to play this weird trick like when I was young, which is also quite weird now. When we used to have like pints in the pub, we used to be drinking pints and someone would be drinking it and I'd look at them and then just put my hands in their pint and go, drink it now. And they'd be like, well, no. And I thought it was so funny at the time.
Do you remember you used to do that thing where you do that on it? And it would make...
I'm a bit of one for that.
Oh, we had it. The best one was... It's not even that funny. I don't know why. At school, we had two ones where... The one would be where we would glue your mobile phone to their desk so you couldn't take it off. And the other one was you put the plug in the basin, because we had basins in our rooms at our boarding school. You would pee into the basin and then pull out the U-bend. And so they would come into the room and go, put their hand in the pee, pull out the plug, and it would all fall on the ground.
That was a classic.
We thought it was hilarious.
Yeah. Okay, so I've got one which is kind of on the subject of what we were just talking about. Dreams. How many the average person forgets how much, like what percentage of their dreams do you think?
Oh,
interesting.
The average person.
The average Joe, like, yeah.
Okay, so Luke, you take this one. You're the guest.
Okay, so the average person. See, because the thing is, I remember my dreams quite vividly, but maybe
so
I'm
you're
not
saying
an
you're
average
is that,
Joe.
Is that because you're quite creative and your job is learning things in a sense?
Yes. Okay, I think the average person forgets 30%.
Oh, see, I would go way bigger. I reckon that. I honestly think it's up there in the 90s.
But how would you know you've forgotten?
Because I think
who's
you
measuring that?
I think yeah,
that's true. This question's bullshit.
Is this the dream weaver that's going, I've seen them all and you're forgetting a good bit?
No, I reckon...
I don't know why he's a cocky geezer.
Actually, it's
flawed.
So let's have that question, but let's have another one just because
I'm going to go for... can you give it... I'm going to go for 90-odd percent.
Okay, well, actually, you're right, Jamie. It's 90%. So.
Oh, my God. Mother...
Says who?
Yeah, well, says the BFG. He's blowing the dreams in their head.
Oh, yeah, of course. I'm sorry. I forget Roald Dahl. It's coming up with questions of the week.
Okay, what is the...
You were 1-0 that week. Look, the cleanest air.
Yeah, that was weird.
Oh, yeah, that was good. That was good. Yeah, that was good.
Really?
What was it?
It was Tanzania, wasn't it? No,
Tasmania.
Oh, Tasmania.
Because nothing's in it.
Tanzania, the air is not so clean. I'd be in there, yes. K Francis. I mean, it is out in the bush, but not. Yeah.
K Francis, we're ready.
Okay. What percent of people are left-handed?
Okay. Okay. I bet you're left-handed, aren't you?
No, I'm not.
But you're not.
But left-handed people, like the type.
No, left-handed people are more creative, are supposedly. They? Yeah. Well. So left-handed people normally. So normally, great sportsmen are sort of left-footed. And
I know, but a lot of left-handed people are very much more clumsy.
All best cricketers are left-handed.
But no, but left-handed people are involved in more accidents.
Okay, well, that's not the question. Okay, go, Luke.
It's sort of losers, left-handed.
Yeah. Hell for loser.
Luke, how many do you think? What percentage?
I think it is 30% again. I just say 30% for everything.
You're going to say it.
No, I think 30. I think it's
30%.
I think in a school classroom of 30 people, you'd have about
70 people that are right-handed.
No, because I think there was always about two.
Yeah, that's
in of 30 people. Oh, so that's even less, isn't it?
Yeah.
So 8%. I'm going for 8%.
So I was going to go 18%.
Okay.
So 18%.
18%.
8%.
All right. Well, we will find out the answer
that's
to that.
That's a really good question, though.
I'm full of them.
Hey, well, Luke, get ready for this, because you're going to hear it in part two, where we're going to have Francis Dari, more little lovely chatter with you, and the answer to the question of the week. See you in part two.
See you in a bit.
See you in a bit.
See you later.
Bye.